Oh, lutefisk, oh, lutefisk, how fragrant your aroma. Oh, lutefisk, oh, lutefisk, you put me in a coma.
Lutefisk scares me more than just a little bit. I have never tried it, and I'm trying to talk myself into making this year the year that I do. Should I or shouldn't I try lutefisk? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday, November 6th. Love it or hate it, lutefisk elicits strong reactions from everyone who has ever tried it. And it is showing up right now at church dinners across Wisconsin and the upper Midwest during this time of year. In this week's edition of Tell Joy Where to Go, we will nose out the best lutefisk dinners and other seasonal Nordic traditions. And I will welcome your recommendations, yay or nay, for lutefisk. And where do you go to get good lutefisk? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Janet Gilmore, a folklorist affiliated with the Center for the Study of Upper Midwestern Cultures at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, where she is an associate professor in folklore and landscape architecture. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. So first off, for the uninitiated, and I am one, what is lutefisk?
What is lutefisk? Well, it's dried cod that has been soaked in lye to soften it up and basically to reconstitute it as if it's fish. And then it, in turn, it's been soaked in water, and then it's cooked, and then it's served and in various states of flakiness and transparency. And you can end up with a rather gelatinous, jiggly-looking thing that really scares the heck out of people. And those of us who are braver or more experienced, we douse it with lots of butter, melted butter, and we eat it with a great relish. And, in fact, when I've been at lutefisk dinners in the Madison area, I have been stunned to see silent, focused eaters consume large platters of this stuff.
And, why is that stunning to you?
Well, it's for me, it's kind of a ritual. It's a ritual for me to eat lutefisk, so I must say that I can eat it and it doesn't bother me, but the idea of eating lots of it is kind of bothers me.
Yeah,
well, I think
funny.
I'm one of the wimps, but I do eat it, and I do love to go to these lutefisk dinners and some of the other dinners that are like it. It has a distinctive smell. It has a different, like I say, it can be more flaky or it can be firmer. And I think the first time I ever had lutefisk where I really thought, hey, you know, this isn't bad, it wasn't quite as flaky as you usually find it at some of the churches around here. So it still had a kind of a chunk of fish character to it, so it didn't seem all that different from eating a rather firm piece of cod.
Well, when I asked about this on Facebook a while back, I had a lot of different critiques and reviews of lutefisk from my Facebook friends, and a lot of people refer to it as jello fish. Now, is it supposed to be like jello fish or not?
Well, it just the lie. If you had a food science person on here, they could explain to you exactly the chemical what happens chemically to the fish. You know, first as you dry it, it develops a certain kind of structure, and then when you add this lye to it, and I think that, you know, when you get your lutefisk these days, it's not actually lye that they use. They use some other kind of chemical that softens up the structure of the fish. And then when you soak that chemical composition out, then the fish gets softer and softer, but it still retains a certain amount of structure and solidity, and this process also makes the proteins more accessible or something like that.
Yeah.
And so I think that then when you cook it, depending on how long you cook it, it will become softer and more gelatinous. And then also there are different ways in which people cook lutefisk. The common way of cooking it is to boil it. And in many cases, the old way of dealing with that was also to put the fish in a cheesecloth so that, you know, if it started to separate, you know, you could lift this out.
Now, here's the rub is that I love cod. I love boiled cod.
Mm-hmm.
I love boiled cod drenched in melted butter.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it's that lye thing that scares me.
Scares the heck out of everybody. And I know my dad used to joke about it, and he wasn't the Norwegian one in the family, you know, sort of like, well, you got to have this rumagret or this flitgret, this, you know, this sort of this cream sauce dessert to protect your stomach from putting this lie down in your body. Why would you want to poison yourself and, you know, ruin your gastrointestinal system by eating this stuff? And it looks so scary. I think by the time you eat it, the lye is long gone.
Yeah.
The lye serves a function to soften up to reconstitute the fish. And there are all sorts of stories about why in the heck did the Norwegians and the Swedes.
That's what I wanted to get into is what is, there's got to be a historical reason why this even exists this way. Was it preservation or what's up with that?
Well, the cod fisheries generated huge amounts of cod, and in the northern climates, you could dry the cod. You could dry it because of the cold air. Cod starts to be fished usually in April, and then in April it's still pretty cold in the Nordic countries. But and then there also is the drying of cod, then using a fire. And there are all sorts of suggestions that, you know, the nobody really knows how lutefisk got started. So there are all of these stories that get kind of fantastic very quickly about, the fish that was being dried had fallen into the ashes during a fire, and it was somebody had pulled it out, and then they rinsed it off and boiled it, and it had this particular character, and that's kind of the legend of how this got going, and was in the ninth century. There's been a long association of cod with fasting for various times of year for Lutheran ritual, for Christian ritual, and during fasting and during Lent and other holidays. And I'm probably going to say something wrong, and there are going to be people out in the audience who are going to be calling in.
They can call in.
There are lots of experts out there, and I'm just realizing that whatever I say is probably going to be considered. Somebody else has some detail that they can furnish. So,
I hope they will. And I know you said there's a lot of different stories out there, but why do we see lutefisk dinners popping up right now in Wisconsin, Minnesota, the upper Midwest during this time of year?
Well, I think ever since we've had Norwegian and Swedish immigrants in particular, but especially Norwegians, I'm being partial. I am Norwegian-American,
yeah.
So. And you can get into arguments with Swedes, especially from Minnesota, about, you know, how you say lutefisk and not lutefisk and who has the rights to this tradition and da-da-da-da-da. But anyway, now let me see. I've lost my thread.
Is it a holiday tradition? Is that why we're seeing church dinners?
It's originally a holiday tradition, but there are, you can find in the literature dating back to the late 19th century, there is evidence of lutefisk being cooked in sort of community church supper situations. But this phenomena that we experience specifically in south central Wisconsin, where we have these really early Norwegian immigrant settlements and churches, that, you know, this is one of these things that I think we need more information about. And a lot of them, I think, really date back about maybe 50 years. And according to Kathy Stalker, who's written a really wonderful book on keeping Christmas Yuletide traditions in Norway and the New Land, there seemed to be this more and more, as people were not making lutefisk in their homes and losing either the interest in going through the steps or
keeping
whatever.
The tradition alive.
In the 50s, around the 50s, 60s, and certainly that's kind of when my mother reclaimed this tradition. That's when the churches started organizing these meals. And then it really became, I think, by the 70s, it became a way of fundraising. And
let me hold you there, Janet, as we will check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about lutefisk. This is Tell Joy Where to Go here on the Ideas Network.
Oh, lutefisk, oh, lutefisk, I put you in the doorway. I've hunted you to ripen up just like they do in Norway.
So, sorry about that. So do you enjoy lutefisk? The Scandinavian delicacy that is popular this time of year. Popular might not be the right word. There's a lot of church dinners popping up across Wisconsin during this time of year, where this rather smelly, gelatinous, dried cod that is soaked in lye is served. Do you like it or not? Is it not quite your kettle of fish? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm trying to decide if I'm going to try lutefisk this year or not. I'm leaning toward trying it. There's a dinner coming up in a church in DeForest. I think it's next weekend, in fact. Not this weekend, but next weekend. And I think I'm going to try at least a bite. And if I don't like it, my husband can eat the rest. What do you think? Should I try lutefisk or not? Do you like it or not? Love it or hate it? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Or you can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest likes it, maybe not loves it, but likes it. Now, Janet Gilmore is a folklorist affiliated with the Center for the Study of Upper Midwestern Cultures at UW-Madison, where she's an associate professor of folklore and landscape architecture. And we have a full line, so let's go to the phones and hear from our listeners. Gail in Maple is with us. Hi, Gail.
Hello.
Hi.
I have to, I'm one of those people, and there's, I guess I love lutefisk because it was a tradition that I'm a Finnish heritage, 100% Finn. It was one of the things when I was a child, my parents always boiled it and they put it in cloth, and it permeated the whole house with this fish that didn't smell very good. Since then, they've changed how they make lutefisk, and I baked it for my Lutheran church. And it is more of a Norwegian and tradition, but the Finns have jumped in there, and I've got little grandsons, and you have to try it once, and that's kind of our tradition. I've got four kids, and each one of our children who have brought their spouses in, it's a tradition that they have to eat a teaspoon of it, and we use it with white sauce on top of it, and
And do they continue to try it after that, or is it, what happens?
Some do. All four of my children do eat it. And like I say, it's kind of a tradition. And for us, it's not Christmas unless you have lutefisk. In Finnish, it's called lipiagala.
Oh.
And so that is the tradition. I went to Finland three different times, and would talk about this lutefisk. And finally, they figured out what it was, and it's lipiagala. And the Finns always eat it with white sauce, but most of the time for Christmas, they don't eat lutefisk anymore, but they eat ham. But it's just been our old Finnish heritage to be eating lutefisk, and I like carrying on the tradition. So I'm going to be cooking lutefisk again for our Lutheran church.
Well, good for you. Thank you very much, Gail, for sharing that. A reaction, Janet?
Oh, I think it's great to have somebody of Finnish heritage talk about the fact that they also follow this tradition. And I think the association with Christmas is really important, and that seems to be historically what has been the case for the retention and revival of lutefisk in among immigrant communities from the Scandinavian countries, Scandinavian and Finnish countries, since the 19th century. And in fact, if you go to these lutefisk dinners, they're populated with people who have been brought up in families who have had this kind of tradition on Christmas Eve or at Christmas. And often, if you sit with a table of veterans, they start waxing nostalgic about the smell of lutefisk and the taste for it and tell stories about it, and it gets kind of almost weepy at times. So there was one group I remember. We had a lutefisk dinner with at Barneveld, which is coming up tomorrow. Barneveld has its lutefisk dinner, and they were touring all of the lutefisk dinners. There's a band, like a little social club. They were going and hitting all of the lutefisk dinners, as many as they could. So they just couldn't get enough of this taste of lutefisk that really took them back to their
Barbara on Facebook writes, Norwegians drown their lutefisk in butter. Swedes and maybe Finns use white sauce. Is that right?
Well, it's possible. I think there's a variety, and also I think there's even the use of a mustard sauce, but I can't be quite sure about that. I mean, we have to accept the fact that people do have different sauces and things that they tend to drench on the lutefisk. The lutefisk is not really eaten all by itself. It's got to be accompanied with something else because it is kind of bland. Now, there are maybe some people who say, oh, no, we eat it completely by itself. But usually there's an association of a lot of other foods with it.
Well,
you know,
the DeForest Church, the Christ Lutheran Church in DeForest, which is one of many that are having lutefisk dinners, is having actually a lutefisk and meatball dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So you meatballs alongside of your lutefisk.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that increases the likelihood that you're going to bring in droves. And there are many people who are big fans of meatballs, but also there are people who will make that's one way of welcoming more people in, because the lutefisk scares some people. And so if you have meatballs, that makes it seem more feast-like, harvest meal-like. It's actually a lot more like what my great aunts would do whenever I would come to visit. I'd end up with duplicates and triplicates about your meat and your starches, et cetera, et cetera. There always were extras of every kind of part of the meal for me to eat, and they, you know, eat more, you're young yet kind of thing. But
and, you know, we'll get to some of the other foods that are served at a lutefisk dinner, but we have other, let me get to some more callers too. Steve in Chippewa Falls is with us next. Hi, Steve.
Morning. Good morning.
Go ahead, Steve. What is, you are a fan of the lutefisk or not?
Yes, I am. I grew up with it. I don't imagine I cared for it at first, but I kept trying it. And, you know, if people are just going to go try lutefisk once, they should really give it another shot. I really enjoy it. We go to several church dinners a year, try to get about four of them. There's two this weekend in this area.
That's an area of, like, Osseo. I see there's a number of them in Osseo.
There's Osseo. Aliva has one this weekend. Blair has one on Saturday. There's one in Strum at the beginning of the year. Very good. I'd recommend finding a good church one to go try it. Lutefisk, when it's cooked right, is actually firm and flaky.
And you told my producer, Steve, that the lutefisk is good, but you think the people at the dinners are what makes this so special.
Yeah, we go number one for the fish, number two for the people. It's fun to see the Norwegian heritage really come through in these churches. You know, we've actually bought Norwegian sweaters to try to fit in a little, but it's fun to listen to these people talk with their Norwegian accent and a little bit of a, you know, we really enjoy the people as much as the fish, I guess.
So you're not Norwegian, but you bought sweaters to try to fit in, did you say, Steve?
No, I am Norwegian.
Oh, okay. I thought you said you put on your Norwegian sweater so you could fit in.
Yeah, we just try to fit in a little more.
Oh, I see.
No, I'm Norwegian and grew up with it. Like the rutabaga. When I go, I have the fish and the rutabaga and one meatball because I try to judge the meatballs from dinner. But I go for the fish.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that, Steve. I should put on a Norwegian sweater, Janet.
Well, that's one thing that you could do. There are people who deck themselves out in their Norwegian sweaters at these events. I always put on something that has some, you know, I have some earrings and some things that I put on. But so it is an opportunity to see people showing their Norwegian American or their other Scandinavian and Finnish American heritage by wearing some more modern emblems of their identities. And then often at some of the churches, the people who are serving you dress up and with a little, you know, a few little flares and outfits and things like that, so that you sort of get more and more in the mood. It is interesting, though, that at many lutefisk dinners, and say at DeForest and at the one that used to be at Lakeview Lutheran Church, the membership that is putting on the feed is not all Norwegian Americans. There may be German Americans and Irish Americans and others. So it's a It kind of represents, at least in Wisconsin, this sort of multi-ethnic presence in our communities. And sometimes you make you wonder why the lutefisk band, but there is this in the crowds who come to these meals, like that gentleman said, there are these people who have Scandinavian heritage or Norwegian heritage. They do talk to each other. They see old friends. They can start talking in these kinds of brogues. And people, of course, are joking a lot about the experience. And in many cases, they get a great deal of humor out of lutefisk. I've had a Foodways class for the past decade or so where I have sent my students out to lutefisk dinners to investigate the food event. And that has been very interesting because these poor students most of the time are paralyzed by the time they go out after I've been telling them what they might expect. And most of them are not familiar with the phenomenon. And they go and they're welcomed in by these regular attendees who then start instructing them in the ways of eating lutefisk properly. And there often are kinds of tests that these new people are sort of put to because they're watched while they take their first bite.
Oh, my goodness. So I better not let people know that I'm a newbie, huh?
Well, they'll ask you.
Oh, they will.
And I really think this is sort of this is very much part of the phenomenon is learning, are you in or are you out? Are you one of us or not? And so it's kind of tongue in cheek. It does scare some of the students. But for the most part, once you've actually eaten a bite of lutefisk, you're in the in crowd. So
that's funny. So besides the students that you make to go to these dinners, or maybe some kids are dragged there by their parents, is this? Do you see a lot of young people at these dinners?
Well, actually, yes. And this is one of the things that's interesting is that that's also, you know, the meatballs help with some, break some kids in. And I think our son finally started eating lutefisk, but he would help himself with meatballs. So this is, there are whole families who go, and there are young people being brought up in this. And in fact, our son, we live in Mount Horeb, which is one of those sort of Norwegian American holdouts. One of his pals' families that was based in McFarland had lutefisk regularly, and so he had a close friend who would just eat volumes of this stuff as a quite a young child. So, and they would go to lutefisk dinners as well. So, it's there are children. I see whole families when you go to Vermont or Barneveld or the Yellowstone Lutheran Church that doesn't have lutefisk, but it has some other things that are distinctive, like this klub.
What is klub?
Well, in this case, this is like a blood. It's like a blood dumpling.
Oh, and I think I'll try the lutefisk.
Yeah, right. Well, it's really distinctive, though, to have this sort of the blood component. In some other parts of the state, you'll have the klub. They're just plain dumplings, but this is really distinctive.
Does it have some blood from a meat in it, or what?
It's pork blood, and actually, then in around Mount Horeb, there's kind of an underground of families that that make this kind of food more regularly outside of these kinds of food, these community functions. And so, I mean, this is one of the things that's fascinating about food traditions is the extent to which there are some of these kind of older foods that are still being perpetuated, but under the radar screen.
Now, our caller mentioned, Steve said that he likes to have some rutabaga with his lutefisk.
That's right, rutabagas, and that seems to be something I was not familiar with from my Pacific Northwest lutefisk eating experience. And that's often on the menu for these church suppers.
And you got to have some lefse, don't you, the bread?
Lefse is very important, and it's one of the highlights of one of these kinds of lutefisk dinners. And that's the one where a lot of people get instruction in how to use the lefse to eat their lutefisk with. And sometimes I think, oh, my goodness, there's got to be about as many ways of eating lutefisk as there are people, but there are some who are very, very definitely using their lefse to shovel up the lutefisk. The lefse is a flatbread that's made from potatoes and flour, and sometimes there are other ingredients. There's a whole range of ingredients that can go into different sorts of lefse, but it's usually a very thin sort of griddle baked round bread that's soft, and then usually at the lutefisk dinners it's been cut into triangles, and then people do different things with the lefse, and it's very much in demand, and it gets passed around. So
let me bring another caller in, Kevin in Escanaba, Michigan. Hi, Kevin.
Good morning.
Yes, you recommend that I try this.
Yes, absolutely, you have to try it.
Yeah, how do you like it?
I don't like it at all.
Oh.
That's what goes to the funny story I had to chuckle as I was driving home from work this morning when this topic came up. Many years ago now, I was home on leave, and my uncle was out in Park River. He loved lutefisk, so it was every Christmas Eve that they hosted, that's what the meal would be. So we went out there, and afterwards, on the way home, I asked my dad, I said, do you like lutefisk? He said, do you? I said, no, not really. He said, why do you eat it? Because I've been eating it for years. I said, well, because you do. And he said, my dad liked it too, so that's why I eat it.
That's funny. So people were eating it as a family tradition, even if they didn't like it all that much. That's funny. Thank you very much, Kevin. We have news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio coming up next, and then we'll continue talking about lutefisk. I am considering trying this Scandinavian delicacy this year, maybe going to one of the church dinners that are around Wisconsin right now. What do you think? Should I try Lutefisk? Do you love it or do you hate it? How do you eat it? What do you like with it? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Janet Gilmore, a folklorist affiliated with the Center for the Study of Upper Midwestern Cultures at UW-Madison. This is the Ideas Network.
Oh, lutefisk, oh, lutefisk, how fragrant your aroma.
We are talking about lutefisk this hour and wondering if you love or not so much lutefisk, and I'm asking you to tell me where to go for lutefisk at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Janet Gilmore is our guest, a folklorist affiliated with the Center for the Study of Upper Midwestern Cultures at UW-Madison. And our next caller is Paula in Racine. Hi, Paula.
Good morning. Oh, this topic has brought back so many family memories. I grew up on the border of Upper Michigan where there's a high population of Finnish and Swedish descendants. And I'm not bad heritage, I'm French and Irish, but that was a Christmas tradition. My dad always asked my mom, we had to have this, and I remember for soaking it because of the lye. And we served it in a white sauce over mashed potatoes. And I think we had the rutabagas and cranberries with it. But I remember I ate lots of mashed potatoes when we had these fish. But it wasn't one of my favorites, but it was a tradition. And the other thing that came up, you were mentioning the blood dumplings. That's also a French dish, but I remember as a kid, we would make, it was called pouda, and it was blood sausage. So we would catch the blood from pigs, butchering pigs. And I remember my mom making that as an all-day production, but that was one of my favorite dishes.
All right, thank you, Paula. But she wanted mashed potatoes to help the lutefisk go down, Janet.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm used to eating potatoes with it, and I think it. Some of the church dinners, you'll get boiled potatoes with it. She's mentioned mashed potatoes as well as a cream sauce again, and of course that kind of supports my dad's theory that you have to have some kind of, you know, creamy thing to try to protect your stomach against this perception that the lutefisk is caustic.
Well, you know, I thought that was funny that our caller before news said that he didn't really like lutefisk, but he ate it because his family ate it, and his dad said, you know, hey, I didn't really like it either, but I ate it because my dad ate it. Is that what's going on here?
Oh, partly. Mm-hmm. Partly. I think it has become a lot more an emblem of ethnicity and sort of a nostalgia for, you know, for people's past heritage and growing up and eating this stuff. But yeah, a lot of people eat things that just because others eat them and yeah, it's put on their plates. And
I thought this was cute, a Norwegian-American saying, about half the Norwegians who immigrated to America came in order to escape the hated lutefisk. The other half came to spread the gospel of lutefisk's wonderfulness.
Well, you know, the Norwegians in particular have thought that the Norwegian Americans are very peculiar in their retention of this foodstuff, and there were, you know, it was hard for people to get lutefisk when they came here, and yet it became a stock fare very quickly with the availability of dried cod, particularly from the cod fisheries via New England. And so many people who I have talked to and interviewed over the years, you know, they will either they went to the store to buy their lutefisk, or there was a family out in Eureka, California that was actually you know, running a little store, and they would import the lutefisk. And then there are all these stories about the lutefisk, you know, standing like boards outside of these grocery shops, and dogs coming along and peeing on them.
Oh my gosh.
Sort of seizing them. So there's a lot of humor in this, but they're really, I mean, I think there's been an association of lutefisk with the Christmas season and an expectation of having fish, yeah, and particularly this kind of fish, with that for your Christmas season foods, often on Christmas Eve. And so as immigrants in this country could get access to this, it became more and more available. And when I've gone to grocery shopping in places like Seattle in the old Ballard district, there used to be reconstituted lutefisk for sale in the grocery stores, and you could see that around this state in some stores as well, especially around the Christmas season.
Let me bring in another caller, Celeste in Monona. Hi, Celeste.
Oh, good morning. How
morning.
Are you?
Good. So you have a recommendation of a place to go for lutefisk?
I do. Enjoy. There's a lot on the line if you haven't tried lutefisk. So I really want you to get great lutefisk.
Okay. And okay. this place will give me great lutefisk?
Right. Big Drywood Church. It's in Cadott, Wisconsin, up by Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire.
Okay.
The church is approximately 140 years old, and they have a wonderful lutefisk and lefse dinner every year. And I just think you should try that one first.
All right, and that sounds very good. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Let's go next to Joy in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Joy.
Hi, Joy.
Yes, I like your name, and you like lutefisk?
Yeah, same here. Steve, the previous caller, and I go to lutefisk dinners together.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really kind of cool. I had lutefisk for the first time, and it was a bowl of gel, and it was really gross. what is all the fuss about this lutefisk stuff? And so, you know, so Steve really likes lutefisk, so we started going to the church dinners. And I really enjoy fish, and so I thought I'd give it another try. And to be honest with you, I really like it now.
Yeah, if at first you don't succeed, try again. Thank you, Joy. John in Richland Center, go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. I'm anything but Norwegian. I'm French and Indian up in Canada. I'm first generation United States. But one of the things is when I would go fishing with my Indian friends up in towards Hudson Bay, we would catch bagfuls of trout. The women would bring them back. The women would clean them. And they would just put nails on the wall, and they just dry the fish out. They just put them up on the walls of the outside, on the north side of their buildings. And that's the way they would preserve it for the whole winter. The other thing that I suspect is that when they went exploring, that probably was the only fish that they could keep dry and keep out on their boats, the Viking ships, so that they had to stay alive somehow on these many long trips. And that was one of the few food they have to dry the food.
Thank you very much, John. I'm sorry because we're almost out of time. I just want to get in as many calls as I could. Janet, we have less than a minute to go. Can you tell me and anybody else who hasn't tried lutefisk, what you might recommend to try it for the first time?
Oh, well, going to one of these church dinners is very good because it's a communal situation and there are lots of veterans there, and some are kindly. And they'll encourage you and help you and give you advice about how to eat things and tell you whether it's good or not. And then usually it's just a matter of taking a little bite and making sure you put plenty of butter on it and eat it with lefse and your potatoes or rutabagas or something like that. So I think that social situation is what really helps in. And it's a very enjoyable social situation. People are very excited when they're at these meals. And the meals also really are, they're full meals. They're served family style. You're usually sitting at a table of eight. And you can get to know people there if the table isn't completely taken up with one family.
Yeah, it sounds great. It really does.
Yeah.
I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to try it. Thanks very much for being with us.
Well, it's wonderful, and I must say that the last caller, the dried fish tradition is widespread among the indigenous people in our region, and that is another story.
And maybe we'll do another show on that, too. Thank you so much. Janet Gilmore, folklorist affiliated with the Center for the Study of Midwestern Cultures at UW-Madison. Lutefisk is a cod that's been preserved in lye. It's a Scandinavian delicacy and a polarizing dish, as we have learned. Some people grow up loving it, others despise it. But that doesn't stop people from packing into the basement of the Christ Lutheran Church in DeForest every year. For months, volunteers plan the dinner and cook everything from scratch, including the 1,900 pounds of lutefisk. WPR's Maureen McCullum went to see what brings people back year after year.
Fish, please.
Yeah, I'm Dan Paulson with Christ Lutheran Church, and I'm one of the co-chairpersons of the lutefisk dinner. And how long have we been involved? Jan, we have been involved since about, what, 1975.
I'm Jan Schultz, living in DeForest, 38 years ago. It was the first dinner.
What it is, it's a cod or a whitefish, and then they dehydrate it and preserve that in lye, and then it has to be rehydrated and wash all the lye out.
When they were immigrating, when they came to this country from Norway, they preserved it and they could put it in their suitcases. It was dry, they could bring it here.
At Christmas, my father was 100% Norwegian, my mother 100% German, so I'm just confused. But at Christmas, we had the lutefisk dinner. My father on my left, my uncle on my right. They passed that dish back and forth between the two of them, and I couldn't stand the smell. And finally, when they killed all the taste buds in my mouth, then I started loving it. So it's an acquired taste. But my sons, they love it right off the bat. Here's some more of the cooks. You can see the kettles of boiling water. So the boiling water drains off. And we drop it into a dish, and that's where we separate the bones from the meat itself.
Yeah, once you get to be a bone picker, you never get rid of this job.
My name is Janice Tipple, and I live in the town of Windsor.
Janice, you said you became a member of Christ Lutheran. For what reason?
Because of the lutefisk dinner.
Really?
I did! Yes! We've been coming to this lutefisk dinner long before we became members. And it was the best lutefisk dinner, and we decided, well, we need to become members of this church.
One way to pick a church.
Today we have a lutefisk and Swedish meatballs with gravy, mashed potatoes, rutabagas, a delicious coleslaw, and lefse. And a melted butter, of course. Plenty of it. Matt Erlinson and Madison.
Wendy Bunster, Antigo, Wisconsin.
This is a generational type of thing. Our grandparents, great-grandparents. We were raised having lutefisk lefse
for Christmas dinner.
The smell one can never forget. It's not good. It has to do with the lye flavor.
Ask him, he travels to all of them, practically.
They asked me how I found the lutefisk, and I said there was a truck went by, and we just followed our nose. My name is Dale, and my last name is Erlinson, and I live in Antigo. My nickname is Swede. That might have something to do with the fact that I like lutefisk. Well, mostly because it's a good fish. Because they cooked the lutefisk just perfect.
Our patriarchs here have been eating lutefisk since they could crawl, and it wasn't our favorite as children, but it's really grown on us, and now it's a great tradition.
I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.